Check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the Nasty Cast, we welcome SiriusXM's Joe Pizzapia. We talk Tebow, Prince, A-Rod, Cardinals, Cargo 2.0, and bullpens. We then hear Harvey Dinkelman tell us about Mike Zanino, and finish the show with fantasy football strategy and targets. What is this, a fantasy baseball podcast?
Yes!
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things. Yeah. Jesse, go toss a potato.
Here lies Joe. He died wearing braces.
Be interesting when she has her heavy flow at times.
It's not Nick Nolte.
That damn dirty ape.
You're going to blow Arkansas?
The Hindenburger cheese.
We follow the golden rule.
I'm in a league with the Pope.
Could have been an accountant.
Replace the baseballs with hand grenades.
Thor, he's like Jesus, but for people from Norway.
Eating ain't cheating. Hello and welcome to episode 91 of the Nasty Cast, Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by thefantasyamateurs.com. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken, and I am joined on this very day by a man who sings a mean version of A Long December by the Counting Crows, Joe Pizzapia. Welcome back to the Nasty Cast.
You've just won greatest intro of all time. I do Mr. Jones as well, and I do many other Counting Crows songs. But yes, I am thrilled to be here. I am the pinch hitter tonight, it would seem, for the show, and I'm happy to be back here on the Nasty Cast. It looks like I cleared out the room, though.
Yeah, well, that's purely a coincidence. Trust me, you're an upgrade over our normal stinky Joe.
Was it something I said?
No, I don't think so. These people that I have to deal with on a daily basis, I mean, they're...
Well, they should have a life once in a while, too.
I guess so. I mean, Joe, he just 2 weeks ago, he traveled to a nude yoga convention in Nevada. And that was so good that he rejoined the leg of their tour that was taking place in Wisconsin, the land of the cheese. So he's doing some nude yoga out there in Wisconsin. I assume he's making brassieres out of Swiss cheese and such.
Wow, there's a strong image that I won't be able to get out of my head for several days.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Nate.
And, of course, Jesse wishes that he could be here because we're going to talk some football in the second half of this podcast today, something that has only been done once before in the history of the Nasty Cast, and that was 2 weeks ago when we had the great Howard Bender, who you know all too well.
All too well. Love him to death, though. I love me some Howard. He is one of my favorite people. He definitely wins, too, for funniest texts that I'll get randomly from him just throughout the day about something ridiculous. Like, he's that guy, and I love him to death.
He's supremely entertaining. Yeah, his terrific Josh Gordon rant. Let's just say he did not care for Josh Gordon's behavior.
Well, he's the one that took him, so, I mean, you know, you got to know what you're getting into.
Absolutely. So, what is your favorite The Counting Crows song? Email us, thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com, or you could tweet us at fantasyamateurs. And, of course, you can find Joe Pizzapia at joepizzapia17 on the Twitter. Also, you can go to thefantasyamateurs.com, buy yourself a Nasty Cast t-shirt. Joe, have you been repping yours at all?
Oh, yeah, dude, I've worn it. And can I throw my 2 cents in on my favorite Counting Crows song? I like... Rain King. You notice every Counting Crows song has to do with some sort of precipitation or some sort of... It's always raining somewhere. It's raining in his mind. It's raining in his apartment. It's like, I need an umbrella, yeah. Because it's raining so hard, yeah. All the time. I mean, it's just, it's a lot of rain.
He's a very downtrodden man. I mean,
he is, and that's why he gets laid so much, because he's really, and that's what we've discovered about him. It's women, I think, are very concerned that he might kill himself, and they're trying somehow to sexually keep him alive and on the planet. And it's a good trick. I think we should all take notes, actually, and try to learn from Mr. Duritz, because he's got quite a resume there going.
I guess so, man. I figured I would have got laid a hell of a lot if I was just depressed in high school, man.
Apparently depressed in a white guy with dreadlocks. That'll do it for you.
Ah, the dreadlocks. No, yeah, I never could manage that. never quite had the hairline for that one.
Yeah, you're talking to the choir here.
Yeah. All right, so please also take a moment out of your day and rate and review the podcast. We do greatly appreciate that. And so before we get further, Joe, I wanted to ask you how your fantasy teams are doing at this point. We're sort of hitting the home stretch, and I think a lot of teams are pretty much eliminated at this point, sort of given up. And, you know, we kind of notice the downloads dip this time of year, too, as everybody sort of switches over to football and a lot of people kind of give up on their baseball teams. So what do you think? How are you looking? You got a lot of contenders?
Oh, well, look, in the ones that matter, I'm alive, in my opinion. This year I took on too many leagues and I knew I was, but I didn't want to say no. And it's always a good exercise to be involved with drafts. And I think that helps you all the time. Right now, I am back and forth for third overall in tout. About it looks like 8 points off the lead. I'm in the hundreds, but Fred Zinke is just impossible. I mean, that guy is just a trade monster. He is impossible to catch. So it's Zinke, Schwartz, and then Steinhorn and myself are kind of just trading back and forth third place right now. I had the first spot for a while there. I have the best record in my home league, which is good, which is super competitive, where everybody is pretty much everybody is like 11-9. I'm like 16 and something, so that's good, and that's for money, so that's important. And then as far as the other ones go, I think I'm holding my own there in the Strafford's League there. I was in first for a long time there. I think I dipped down. But I'll tell you what, Nate, you're right. For those of us who cover multiple sports, in the leagues that you know that you're kind of out of, you do your best to set lineups, you do your best to hang in there most of the time. But, you know, you really got to turn the focus to football. Takes up so much of your time this time of year for me. For the preseason draft coverage that goes on, so it's a tough thing to balance. But for sure, I'm still fighting in the ones that I've put all my eggs in those baskets, and so far those baskets are bearing fruit. So got to catch Fred Zinke. I don't know how. Somebody's got to find that guy and kidnap him or something.
Yeah, get him off the internet for a couple of days.
And if we would all just not trade with him, and I've done it once or twice this year already, but it's like we all make trades with him, and he just keeps finding a way to get the better of all of us.
You're enabling him.
We are. We need to like collude. And
yeah.
I want to see where he's going to finish if we don't trade with him. That's what I want to see.
That is the key. You know, I will sort of give a kick in the ass to some of the teams that are sort of middling. You know, there's some things that can happen down the stretch that can really propel you. Like, you only need one or two big players to sort of emerge. And it was at this point 2 years ago in a 15-team Dynasty Roto League, in fact, the prestigious Dynasty Dynasty Baseball League, where I was sort of stuck in the muckety-muck. I think I was in, like, eighth place or something like that. And I ended up finishing in the money. I think I took fourth that
nice.
Year. So, really, I mean, if you just keep at it, a lot of people tune out this time of year. So, you know, you can really get on the hot players and ads, you know, and whatever September call-ups, even just speed-only guys, that kind of stuff. And it can really propel you. And, you know, even if you don't take down the league, if you finish in the money, obviously that's, you know, that's better than nothing. So,
absolutely.
But while we're on that, I have a little bit of a rant. I've been pretty effing pissed off today because – because I am the commissioner of said prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. And guess what? CBS hasn't been working all goddamn day. It's been down. And apparently it's been down at several points for the last 3 days. Nobody has been able to set their lineups. I pay $150 for their service. Well, not I, but we as a collective group all pitch in $10. It's a 15-team league. $150 for this. And not only is there support dog shit, like, if I've had draft problems before. I've had player issues before. They have emailed me back. Like, I swear to God, they have not even read what I emailed them. They just – whatever generic bullshit they can take off the top of their brain. And completely no help at all. I've basically been alone on an island to figure out, you know, all this managerial stuff and how to do it myself. And – to pay $150, you know, it's a dynasty league. So supposedly you have all these minor leaguers that are in there. You got this big fancy player pool and everything. And guess what? I am adding more and more unlisted players, you know, every year.
Really?
They really That's don't shocking. Have that.
Because I'm in a very deep dynasty league on CBS and I'm a commissioner on that side as well. And I've actually always found them in the past to be very good. I'm shocked. I'll tell you what, you should escalate that and keep going and because, you know, you are paying a fair amount to run a league on there. So I think that you should get something out of it. I mean, say some sort of discount towards next year or something if they're really kind of screwing up stuff.
Well, I pushed last year to get the league moved to Fantrax, but there was not enough support for that. I just posted a poll to the league, and most people were like, eh, you know, they weren't really swayed. They were sort of complacent because they didn't have to deal with support like I did. So,
Well, that's the brunt you bear when you're the commissioner, and that's a hard thing. It's very hard to be the commissioner. People don't realize it. I mean, I'm the commissioner of one league, and I won't be commissioner of any other one.
I know, yeah.
You know, between collecting the money and making sure and then dealing with this person's problem and this and that, it's hard. It's a lot of work and a lot of nonsense. And then there's resentment when you do well. It's like you can't win. And yet you want to compete in the same level as everybody else. So it's a very, very tricky thing. And I actually wrote a chapter in the Black Book that's in there every year about being a commissioner, which I think is very useful for anyone who is. Of just some guidelines and some things to think about as you're either setting up a league or running a league, of how it can be a better experience for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll definitely be touching on the Black Book once again later on once we get into the football stuff. And I will say that the league doesn't resent me too much for I won the league last year, and we do this pot of gold thing where if you win consecutive years, every year we set aside a little extra money that goes into this pot, and the winner of consecutive years gets that pot. And it's a pretty sizable now, and I've been in first place. I've scuffled down to second place now in that league, but not being able to set my lineup obviously today was infuriating for me, who, being amidst a race for first place and potentially a sizable chunk of coin has my panties up in a bunch. So,
as it should.
I just had to get that little rant off my chest. So with that said, we're gonna find out now what is in the box. All right, this question comes from Evan Booth, who is currently pacing the NastyCast Podcast League. And, of course, the winner of that gets a free T-shirt and an interview on the show. So looking forward to talking to Evan Booth, although I got to say, been rooting for Barry Baker, who's a British chap. And so I kind of want to talk to him just to hear his accent. But Evan will do. I think he might be Canadian. So that's a plus. But anyway, he wants us to talk about this hot button topic right now. He begs the question, where in the first round are you drafting Tim Tebow next spring? Does he go before or after Harper?
Well, certainly before. He's Tim Tebow. Everyone keeps saying he's a two sport athlete, and I keep saying, well, what was the other sport he played? Because I don't recall that. No, look. God bless Tim Tebow. I mean, he's if I looked like Tim Tebow and I had the connections to things that Tim Tebow does, I don't know if I would still be trying to play a sport for a living. He's on TV already. He's doing games. He's doing TV shows. He's making a difference. I mean, go be Tim Tebow. I think this is just a thing where, I think it's hard for an athlete who played at a high level and excelled to accept that. When they're still feeling so strong and so good and so virile that their athletic career is over. And it's unfortunate. But, I mean, there's lots of things that he can do. I saw him take BP in the cage. I saw that footage. He's got a lot of bat speed for a guy who drags the bat through the zone because he's so strong. I mean, I have no idea what Tim Tebow would be as a baseball player. I don't know if he could make it out of single A necessarily. But yeah. I do know if that's his dream and that's his passion, and if somebody wants to, put money into that circus. I just hope that every time he hits a home run, he doesn't, go drop down to one knee. It's not like football.
Yep. Oh my God. He would get thrown at so much.
I mean, can you imagine every time he gets a single, he's like at first base, he's down. I mean, it's a little much. It's a different game. He's got to scale that back a little bit, but I would say after Harper, that's my answer.
That's a good answer. Yeah. When I was at the Futures game, when it was at Target Field, and the second half of that is the celebrity softball game, and Adrian Peterson took part in that, and boy, did he fill out a uniform, like Tim Tebow, I imagine, would, but he was awful. So.
Well, that's the thing about baseball, Nate, is that it is the great leveler. It is such a hard game, and there's so many great athletes who can't throw a ball or hit a ball. But they're great athletes. They're fast. They can jump. They can do all these things. But, the athleticism and the skill set, that baseball actually demands of you is far superior to any other sport. And I always hold that to be very true. I mean, Ted Williams said the hardest single thing to do in sports is to hit a round ball with a round bat. And he's right. It's the hardest thing, especially when a guy's throwing 95 or a guy's throwing a ball that starts out here and ends up over there. It's an incredible thing. And I think it's funny when some of these guys with great athletes decide that they want to try to be a baseball player. Yeah, I mean, Deion Sanders was able to kind of sort of make it. We all know Bo Jackson was Bo Jackson, but he was sure. He was a very serious baseball player. Some might even say a baseball lover first, necessarily. So I think that that's a very unique thing. Brian Jordan comes to mind too. That's one that we don't talk about. I mean, that guy was a pretty darn good athlete. He's a pretty good football player and a heck of a baseball player.
Yeah, it's it's almost a detriment sometimes to be just this huge muscled guy. Seems like you're maybe prone to more injuries in baseball.
Ask Giancarlo Stanton, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have to be a big guy either. Look at Jose Altuve; he's one of the best players in baseball right now, and he's the size of my left leg. So
good. I love him so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's great. So, all right, we're gonna get into the news.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
We're gonna start off with a piece of news that shocked me initially, just because of the name, and then the more I thought about it, the less shocked I was due to the injuries in the past. But Prince Fielder has been forced to retire from baseball. Joe, I don't know if you watched the video today of him announcing his retirement, his press conference and everything, but did this catch you off guard? And I mean, how bad do you feel for poor Prince Fielder? He's taking a lot of heat now, and he didn't necessarily choose to retire. He will never be medically cleared. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's what the official word is, that the doctors basically said you can't continue to play Major League Baseball. And he hasn't been the same player for a while. 2013 was that last glowing year that he had. And it's very funny, when that trade happened with Texas, everybody said, wow, what a steal. Prince Fielder went over and all they got was Ian Kinsler. And if you look at the last 3 years, it's a joke. I mean, Ian Kinsler is far more productive player than Prince Fielder. In fact, Fielder, he played one full season last year, but it wasn't a great season. It was an okay season. So it was an okay season by most standards, but not by Prince Fielder's standards. And that's a shame. And you never see anyone like to go out like this on an injury. And he had a very good career. Very odd that he and his father have the exact same amount of home runs. Yeah. Baseball is such a strange numbers game like that. It's full of such bizarre stats, and that's one of those that when I heard that, I couldn't believe that they have the exact amount. And there was a guy too, who Prince Fielder's father, Cecil, who is a guy that was a major leaguer and then left for a while and then came back and had his better years towards the later part of his career, towards his 30s and beyond, as opposed to Prince Fielder, who was so great right away. And look, there was a run there where he was playing 160 games every single year, 162 most of the time, and hitting 35 home runs, driving in 110, and he was an incredibly productive player. Big-time walks, big-time power. He was fun to watch. He was exciting, and it's a shame that this is the way his career is ending, especially with Texas being in a pennant race. So it's a bummer, and it's a bummer, not for fantasy owners, but for baseball lovers. I think it's just not how you want to see a guy like that go out, whereas A-Rod, I could really care less.
Yeah, I think we're all sort of much more glad to see A-Rod go, certainly, than Prince Fielder. And it's with A-Rod, obviously, it's not an injury thing, because I feel so bad for Prince. He was a guy who I was kind of in on. Not necessarily. I was okay with, if you're waiting at first base, I thought, maybe another year removed from that neck injury, maybe he'll get his power back a little bit. Certainly that was not the case. In fact, it got worse. Obviously, we've seen what's happened there. But what about A-Rod? I mean, we could touch on that real quick. Are you more pleased to see him out of baseball now, or are you going to miss him?
Well, like I said the other day, I'm a cynic. As soon as it happened, I tweeted out, "You think he failed a drug test?" Because, I mean, it's kind of an odd
time. It's got to cross your mind, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it crossed my mind right away. It was the first thing that popped in my mind. I'm thinking, well, maybe, things were rough, or, he got caught again, or it's been a bad season for him. It's a little embarrassing. And maybe it's, look, this is the deal. You retire, we put you in the organization, we give you some, fluff job, and you stick around the game and blah, 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 and you don't make a disgrace of yourself a second time in a row. I could certainly see that happening. If anyone thinks that stuff doesn't go on in professional sports or in business or whatever. I mean, you're crazy. Of course it does. But even if it's legit, and even if he just said, you know what, I just don't have it anymore, I'm just done, it's just weird timing for me. And I don't discount A-Rod. You know, I said this the other day on Dear Mr. Fantasy, and I'm going to say it on Sirius on Saturday night, the same thing when I talk about it, is I there's no love lost for me with Alex Rodriguez. I adore the production. I loved having him on fantasy teams in my life. I long for the days of the PED users in fantasy baseball. It was such a fun game to play when the guys who hit 25 home runs were like, oh, God, you know, that's more like a fourth or fifth round guy. I mean, he only hit 20 home runs last year. I don't know if I really want to go with that guy.
Yeah.
You know, it was an incredible time to be playing. And that was kind of when I came of age in fantasy baseball. So for me, that era was really like the pinnacle. So great. It was so much fun. And A-Rod represents that era perfectly. And look, he's a terrific talent. I'm not saying his talent came from steroids. It didn't. But it's certainly enhanced by performance-enhancing drugs. And when you see the regimen that he was on, you know, I have to take this pill at this hour before this releases, and then this has some – I mean, when you read those messages that we're going back and forth, they're just insane. And I think he's an obsessive, crazy human being who has a lot of other issues. And I would have taken steroids if I was given a chance to play Major League Baseball in a second. All that money, all that guaranteed money, 100%. Fame, celebrity, all those things. I think what you miss out on the back end is you don't get the reverence. You don't get the love on the back end. I'm a lifelong Mets fan. I said this the other night too. I loved Mike Piazza. I was thrilled when he hit home runs for my team. I was a huge fan. I had the jersey. I am pretty sure that there were some extra things going on there, and I didn't even watch the Hall of Fame speech. And I don't begrudge him his place there, but if you want to talk about a guy in a 62nd round who made it to the Hall of Fame, there's a reason why that doesn't happen. And whether it's enough to get you over the hump or to get you seen or to get you into that next level, I don't know. And I know the playing field was level. I mean, how do you feel about it, Nate? Do you like shed a tear for any of these guys, or do you look at them with reverence, or do you just say, okay, that was your career, good job, you did what you did in the era, and you accept it and you move on?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the Hall of Fame should stop worrying about that, because like you said, like everybody was doing it, you know, so it was just a different era, and it's not like you can just pretend it didn't happen. And I don't blame him for doing it. You know, like you said, it's a huge paycheck, and at the time you don't know if you're ever going to get caught. So why not make, you know, $100 million and hit 40 home runs a year? I don't blame
you. Yeah, and I mean, you know, you can. I'll take the millions of dollars. You can take the legend status.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know,
yeah,
I'm good with that. I'm at peace with that. Now, some guys aren't, which is funny. And then the nature of the athlete at that level isn't okay with it. They want both. And I think that's where they get – that's where they cross that line where they get chippy about stuff. And you see Bagwell's been chippy about it. And, you know, I mean, he's another one. Come on. You know, let's – let's call it what it is. We all know what it is, and that's okay. And I don't have a problem with them being in, but I'm also not going to be the one who's, you know, comparing them to the all-time great players either. I'm not comparing them to Ted Williams. I'm not comparing them to Willie Mays. I'm not going to compare them to even players of the generation before. Bonds is a weird case. Bonds was, I believe, you could see physically the difference in him from, you know, 94 on. But even before 94, you could look at that career and go, my God, that was – you know, a pretty special player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's move on to another player who probably should have taken PEDs, and that's Carlos Gomez, who's been DFA'd by the Astros. Segue, A-plus segue right there. So does he get picked up the rest of the season? And if so, what sort of production do we see from him?
I would be shocked if somebody didn't pick him up. I mean, just the way injuries are in this league, you'd imagine that somebody's going to pick him up. But it's been dreadful. It's funny. You know, the Mets were very close to acquiring him last year, and we all remember the trade deadline fiasco that went on there. And, you know, they ended up getting Cespedes and making it to the World Series. And ever since, I mean, when he went to Houston, it was not a good scene. And I wrote about that when he was traded, that he had bad numbers in that ballpark, which was odd. He wasn't the greatest American League hitter either, whether you want to take the sample size from the Twins days as well. But, you know, American League, for some reason, wasn't always his thing. He goes over to Milwaukee, which was a very good hitter's park also, and was had some terrific years there. But if you want to be honest about it, he had, you know, two very good years, one pretty good year with a high steal total, that's for sure. So fantasy terms, yeah, he was terrific. So it was like a three-year window there. He was very good, and now he's hitting 30. And it's just bizarre. I know he had issues last year with his legs, and that is a big problem for a guy like Gomez, who his game is, you know, all of his power from his swing came from his legs. If you watch his kind of swing, all of his generation of power is from his hip rotation and from the lower half. He's not an up top hitter, as they would say. And as far as the steals, you see, I mean, he's got 13 this year. I mean, that's not terrible, but it's a far cry from the guy who was stealing 35 to 40 a couple of years ago. I'm sure someone will pick him up in a very deep league. I would take a flyer on him just because why not? Because look at some of the other crap that's on the waiver wire. It's worth a shot.
Yeah.
And that's how you've got to feel about it. I mean, I would throw a couple of dollars of fab on him if I had it left. But yeah, it's been a very, very quick descent for him.
Yeah, very sad. I mean, you've seen everything really except for the steals really drop off. Swinging strike rate shot up to 17.7% this year, and his contact in the zone dropped 8% from a year ago. So maybe we're seeing some bat speed fall off there, and you know, that's something that you can't really get back. At 30 years old, it's tough to see that you know, coming on already. But you know, that goes back to the steroids. A lot of people sort of think that one of the effects that we're seeing from the lack of steroids is careers ending earlier. So do you buy into that at all?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, you were talking about guys who are playing into their 30s and in almost 40s and not just being good, but being some of the best players in the league. That does not happen. I'm going to be 38 in September, and I can tell you there's things that hurt on me that I don't know why they hurt. That's the difference about getting old.
Well, you got to stop doing all that nude yoga.
Oh, well, that's the first thing, especially with all the cheese curds in Wisconsin and all that stuff. That's very slippery.
You got to stretch, but, man.
But it's true. I mean, that's part of getting older, and these guys were phenomenal athletes. I also think that the athlete nowadays just puts so much stress on their body by training all year round. I am not the proponent of that. I think baseball is a very, very specific game, and I think it demands training. It demands you to be in good physical condition and all of that, but I believe the human body needs to rest. And I don't think these guys do enough of it. And I think that that's a problem. I think they're wound too tight. And we just talked about how the muscle-bound guy tends to have trouble in baseball. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for that. But, yeah, I mean, look at – here's a perfect example of a PED thing impact or lack of thereof. Look at Jermaine Dye. Remember Jermaine Dye? A very, very productive major leaguer who basically fizzled out and – 1 year, just nobody signed him. He was 36 or whatever he was, and everyone just said, oh, see ya, bye. And that's kind of what you're going to see, which was the normal trajectory of a career, that guys, by the time they got to their, you know, mid-30s, it was pretty much the twilight of their careers, unless they were extraordinary talents like the Jeters or Tony Gwynns of the world or Wade Boggs. So those were the kind of guys that kind of let – and, you know, I talk about body types. Let's talk about Tony Gwynn. I mean – not exactly a Greek god.
Not quite.
But a guy who played to his 40s, you know? And I think that there's something to be said for the fact that these guys – it's different between training your skill set and training your body so that it can't withstand this constant pace. It's very hard. It's very tough. But, yeah, I think PEDs – that's why it's also become a younger man's game. Yep. You've seen these guys make a big impact early in these careers because they have got better skills. They've got better training. They've been – playing baseball all year round. He's got these academies in the Caribbean countries. That it's a whole different, literally, it's a whole different ball game now. And that's why these guys are coming up and they're so much more advanced at the age of 22 than a player was even 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even if he doesn't get well, he'll probably get picked up at the end of this year sometime, like you said. But, you know, next year I wouldn't be surprised to see a team like the Braves maybe take a chance on him and try to recoup some of that value and pull a BJ up.
That's a great landing spot. That's actually a hell of a landing spot for him. That's because it's all upside, and they can get him on a cheap on a one-year show-me deal.
So let's see. We'll move on to the St. Louis Cardinals. They've got a lot of action going on. We've got Michael Wacha has been placed on the DL. His was a scapular injury, his shoulder basically. That injury from 2 years ago is flaring up again, unfortunately. So he's gone, but Luke Weaver has been called up to the Cardinals' rotation. Across two levels of the minor this season, Weaver has a 130 ERA with 92 strikeouts and only 12 walks in 82 innings pitched. So what type of leagues are you looking at picking up Luke Weaver in, Joe?
Well, certainly deeper ones. I think you have to just temper your expectations just a tad because he's only ever thrown 105 innings in the major leagues. Oh, excuse me, in professional baseball, pardon me. And he's already up to 83 this year. So you figure that he's got enough left in the tank to get you through June, and then he's going to hit a severe innings wall if he's going to be asked to continue this. Now, he's a little bit older. He's 22. He's not like a 20-year-old kid. He's, you know, not 19 or anything. But you got to love statistically what he's done. I think this is a guy, too, that probably hasn't gotten as much discussion as some other pitchers in other systems. Heck, even Reyes in the system gets a lot more publicity than Weaver has. But Weaver's been absolutely lights out at Double-A this year. I also struggle with the idea of pitchers coming up from Double-A and succeeding in the major league. So you have to temper your expectations there as well, because the level of talent at Double-A is terrific, but it's not the same caliber of hitter you're going to find at in the major league level. I think for a couple starts, you might be able to get lucky and get a couple out of him. He's going to be on a severe pitch count for sure. So expect a lot of 5 2/3, which is going to limit the win. But as far as in a points league, I would certainly consider him in Roto or Roto categories. I think it's going to be a little tougher. But look, any port in a storm right now, because injuries are mounting and mounting every day.
Oh, tell me about it. I lost four outfielders. I'm in a 24-team league, and I've lost four outfielders already this week.
And you can't come back from that. Like, it's one of those things like you almost can't do because the wire is so barren.
Yeah, I mean, in this particular league, it's just the sim league. I won't get into it. It's a crazy, crazy league. But basically, like, your own depth is it. You know,
there's, oh, I know. I'm there's in a 24-team dynasty league with 10 minor leaguers per team. So, yeah, believe me.
Yeah. I hear you. So, you wouldn't think that it would hurt losing Scott Van Slyke, but it does.
Oh, it's funny. When you're in a league that deep, the names that you'll see on the waiver wire and you just want to, like, shoot yourself because you can't believe that you're contemplating adding this guy and spending a dollar on him, but you get desperate in those situations. And it's hard because when you have such a deep minor league pool, it's almost impossible because, you know, everybody that you would want to, like, pull up from the minor leagues or something like that or who is getting called up is already on a roster. So you're really, you know, out of luck, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're hosed. And circling back to, you know, Luke Weaver, I think that this is the time of year where, you know, like you said, you're sort of just looking at the next couple starts, and that's just how you need to live right now. I think you just need to stream and try to catch lightning in a bottle at this point and – you know, just churn and burn that waiver wire and see whatever, you know, throw it against the wall and see whatever sticks. We're going to stick in St. Louis and the aforementioned Alex Reyes. He's been called up, but he's going to pitch out of the bullpen. 4.96 ERA in AAA this year is, of course, pitching in the Pacific Coast League. So those numbers don't sound rosy, but you have to take them with a grain of salt. But he does have 93 strikeouts and 65 in a third inning. So obviously his value isn't great this year. But obviously, you know, dynasty leagues, he needs to be owned. So are you excited to see his stuff? And also, are you worried about them keeping him in a bullpen role a la like a Trevor Rosenthal, where he, you know, he was a starting pitcher prospect, got called up, ended up closing, doing a great job, and he's sort of been stuck there ever since. You don't see that sort of doom and gloom for Alex Reyes, do you?
You know, nothing shocks me, but I will say this. They've done a very good job in St. Louis in the past of bringing up guys, younger guys, getting them exposed to the big leagues, which actually used to be the old school pattern of getting a pitcher acclimated to the big leagues. You used to have to make your bones in the bullpen before you got a shot at their starting rotation. That's how it used to be back in the old days. And the last guy that I can remember to do that successfully was actually on this team, which is Carlos Martinez. So St. Louis has done this before. I mean, even I remember Johan Santana with the Twins. He was out of the bullpen for a while first and then got his spot. I actually like that way of breaking in kids. I would not be shocked. Yeah, I think it's much, much better for them. It's a lot less pressure. But you don't see it happen because they don't want to break their routine. God forbid we break the routine of these precious, precious pitchers. He's certainly from if you look at his stat line, he's very exciting. He's very young. He's very raw. He's only 21. Control has really been his problem. And he's the kind of guy that if you do make him a closer, he has the potential to be a lights out guy because this is a guy that has enormous velocity, great movement. The problem is controlling that movement from time to time. And I believe that if Reyes is given the opportunity to develop as a closer, he would be terrific. I don't think that's what St. Louis has in mind. You know, they've got a lot of mileage in that rotation with Wainwright, you know, getting older. You know, Waka has been injured the last couple of years. They really need a guy like Reyes to kind of step in eventually and kind of be the next guy in that rotation along with Martinez. So I wouldn't be shocked if that happens. I also wouldn't be shocked if Rosenthal gets reacclimated to the starting rotation next year in spring training.
Interesting. Yeah, that would please me. I always thought it was sort of a shame that he was banished to a bullpen role. And obviously we've seen even that didn't really work out. So, yeah, maybe they do a little toying with him. And, you know, it's a big difference with what the Cardinals are doing with Alex Reyes as compared to, you know, like a guy like Kevin Gausman, who the Orioles have bounced from starting to, God, you know,
the worst.
Yeah. So I definitely,
that's a problem because they never let him stay in one spot.
Yeah.
If you're going to,
that's different.
Say, look, be in the bullpen this year and that's your role. They put him bullpen. Then he's a spot starter. Then they sit him down to stretch him out. Then they bring him up and he's back in the bullpen. I mean, they screwed that kid and he's finally pitching better this year.
Yes.
His record does not show how well he's pitched this year at all. And that's going to really affect his draft value next year. And shouldn't, he's a guy that I would be all over next year.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been a little homer prone, but yeah, like you said, I think I'm going to be pretty stoked to be purchasing him next year. So one last little bit of news we're going to talk about here. Michael Brantley has experienced another recurrence of right shoulder discomfort, which I have every day. He's doubtful to return this season, however, so I was wondering where we're going to value him for the 2017 season after this lost season. And the way we're going to do that is play a little dude feud.
I'm the dude, so that's what you call me, you know? That or his dudeness or duder or, you know, El Duderino.
All right, the way this works, Joe, is we are going to go to ESPN's PlayerRater here, which is not necessarily the norm. Usually we use Yahoo, but I've got ESPN pulled up, so that's what we're going to use. But anyway, I'm gonna go down the list here of outfielders and try and get a range of where you are on Michael Brantley for 2017.
All right, let's
this
do
last
it.
Season. So obviously, we're gonna skip past the Trouts and the Mookie Bettses of the world and whatnot.
Oh, really?
I think so.
All right.
Either that or you're a lunatic.
I don't know. I have got Tebow right there, neck and neck.
That's true. Okay, Mike Trout or no. actually, the number nine guy, this is interesting, and this is maybe a flaw of ESPN's PlayerRater. They kind of overvalue steals a little bit, but Billy Hamilton, who's been on a tear recently, is number nine right now with his crazy steal rampage. Do you think you're going to go for a guy like Billy Hamilton next year, or is that too low?
Oh, man, I hate Billy Hamilton, but at least he's on the field, and that's the concern that I have. So I would go Billy Hamilton in that case. And I'll tell you what, Nate. I was the guy who was actually – I was high on Brantley coming into this year until I heard that he was going to be back sooner than expected. And as soon as everybody else moved him up their board, I took him off completely of my board. I don't own him in any league, not any share, because my fear was he would rush back too soon, never heal properly, and it would be a lingering thing all year. And I wrote about it. I wrote about it everywhere I could. And it's, you know, if you listen, then you did all right there. But that's the worst. It's the absolute worst. I understand they want to get back and I understand they're gamers, but that just reeked to me of a situation where it's just going to linger all year and he's going to keep having reoccurring issues, or worse, he won't be the same player he is when he's on the field. And it's been all of the above for Brantley.
Tell me about it. I had him in two leagues. One of them was a dynasty league, and I managed to unload him in a trade that landed me Jose Quintana. Which is
nice. There you go.
Yeah, some much needed pitching for me.
Well, but it's funny, Nate. Everybody does this. When a guy is injured and they all of a sudden this timetable gets moved up, everybody is joyous. You're not necessarily should be joyous about it. You've got to really temper your expectations, and that actually could be a very, very dangerous bit of news when you're dealing with a player with an injury, especially one like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that we preach in the preseason, or at least that I preach, even more so than Stupid Joe, who's normally here. You know, it's just the guys that I just stay completely away from guys that are injured in the preseason. I was burnt by Corey Hart, I think it was, a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, he's supposed to miss a week or two at the beginning of the season. He ended up missing the whole year, and ever since then, that's sort of like my lesson. But getting back to Brantley here, let's see. We have at number 19, a guy who slid a little bit recently, but maybe more of a similar skill set to the Brantley, and that's Odubel Herrera.
I'll take Odubel Herrera because I still think there's room to grow with him, whereas I think Brantley, you've already seen his max. I'm not saying that he's the same kind of caliber of talent necessarily as Brantley, but I'll take a healthy rising Odubel Herrera over an injured question mark Michael Brantley.
Michael Brantley or Matt Kemp?
You know, it's funny. Kemp gets crapped on a lot, and I think it's unfair. I think, you know, Kemp drove in 100 runs last year.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and
for the Padres.
For the Padres, for the freaking San Diego Padres.
It's hard to do.
And I think it was a little tough for him to adjust. And now this year, you know, he's moved to Atlanta. And I think that once they move into that new ballpark, they'll start to put a lot of pieces. They got Swanson coming. They've got Albies coming. They've got a lot of pieces coming there. I would probably still lean towards Matt Kemp, but there's where you get – it gets a little more about format. You know, and I think in Roto I might try to go with – Brantley, because he does have the wheels that Kemp does not have. I think that would be the make or break. But in a straight points league, I think I'll take Kemp's power and RBI production over the question mark of Brantley too. But that's a close one.
Yeah. See, Matt Kemp is just, his play discipline is just falling to crap this year. So I might.
Oh, he's playing in San Diego. I mean, you know, when you're not playing for anything, it's just hard. Not that Atlanta's better, but
I mean, poor Matt Kemp, guy that he probably thought he's going to get dealt to a contender, and he goes to the Braves.
And he made this comment. He's like, "It's going to be great to play in a city where they care about baseball." And I went, "Really?"
Yeah, or a city where they're pissed at every Brave, for charging them for a new stadium and all that. But that's a whole different can of worms. We don't want to open that right now. We'll be going forever. But I'm going to move way down the list here so we can try to get some kind of a sense here. Maybe at 39 we've got Jacoby Ellsbury.
Again, in a roto format this is tricky. I actually own Ellsbury and Tout this year in a Fred Zinke trade, I might add, which I'm regretting. Yeah. But I think that's where you're talking about a guy who's older, and you're talking about a guy who has as many injury questions every year as Brantley would. So I think that's where I'll take the younger version, and I'll take Brantley there. That's you win.
Okay. No, that's we're looking at outfielder number 35, 47.
Yeah, I think that's about where I feel comfortable. There's too many young talented guys there with upside, and it's hard. And unless he came out and had a really healthy, terrific spring, but you're not going to know that depending on when you're drafting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. It's a bummer. We're gonna move on to some closer calamities.
Watch out for that first step. It's a doozy.
All right, we're going to start in Miami, where AJ Ramos has been sent to the DL. I guess this is more of just a public service announcement. I don't know if there's too much analysis really here. Fernando Rodney's your closer now. I looked to add him, and he was still owned from his time when he was closing before in all of my leagues. I'm in six leagues. He was already owned already. So if he's out there, are you picking him up?
Sure. I mean, why not? He shoots arrows into the sky. He's fun to watch. He wears his hat to the side. He's a complete dumpster fire one night, and then the next night he's a lockdown guy. This is the tale of Fernando Rodney. I mean, you look at him statistically over the years. You know, there's years where he'll have like a 4.5 ERA and years where he'll have like a 1 ERA. Yeah. You don't know. He's completely infuriating, and he is like – he's in that Armando Benitez mold of horribly frustrating closers and people to own. But you have to own him. And this has been the craziest year of closer carousel I've ever seen, between the injuries that you've gotten, between all of these, the trades, people have lost jobs, the suspensions with Chapman. I mean, it was just crazy. The market of for saves this year was unreal, and it goes back to what I preach, and I preach this very, very strongly, which is make an investment in one of those Teflon, Aroldis Chapman, Kenley Jansen type guys, because the rest of them are a complete crapshoot, and the worst thing you can do is spend medium money on the medium tier, because they will let you down every time. And if you're gonna spend up on the big guys, or don't spend on anything at all and just wing it, or go into be aggressive with the fab or trades. But it's crazy. And that's why I'm okay with spending $30 in an auction on a top closer. I'm okay with that because I know I'm getting 35 saves and big time strikeouts, and I know what I'm getting. I can lock it up. And then the rest I can just add in. But these other guys, when you're spending on these guys, the money on the Houston streets of the world, I want to kill myself.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I mean, if I'm not spending up for those big guys, then I'm usually just going for the absolute back end trash as opposed to sort of the middle road. And it seems like if there's one true knack that I have in fantasy baseball, it's handcuffing the right closers. I always seem to have pretty good luck with that. And I, as long as you monitor those situations closely, you know, which guys to handcuff, then you can just come into a lot of saves as the season goes on. And, you know, like you said, you can spend a lot of fab too, chasing the almighty save. We're going to move on to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, where Cam Bedrosian has been sent to the DL with right middle finger flexor tendonitis. He was flipping off people just left and right, and it got stuck in the up position, from what I understand. I mean, this kind of went under the radar. You talk about A-Rod being a character problem, and you got Cam Bedrosian just flipping off everybody constantly. Really, really was underreported, but he flipped people off so hard that he got sent to the DL because he had tendonitis in his finger. So who's closing for the Angels now?
What are you doing Tuesday? You free? What's going on here? Look, I think whoever's – I guess it's Salas?
I know.
I mean, I think it's by default. I mean, that's the problem. Hopefully – I don't know what the maybe you know better than I. How long is Bedrosian going to be out? Which is a shame because there's another kid who at 24 looked like the heir apparent here. And I think he will be next year. You look at the strikeout rate is spectacular. He's very, very hard to hit. The hits per nine is under seven. Whenever you see a hit per nine rate in the six range, you know that's a guy that's really tough to square up, whether it be reliever or starter. And the walk rate was down significantly from last year. It's down two whole rates there. So for me, it's a bummer because I picked up Bedrosian just last week and I was like, oh, awesome. This is another lights out guy, big time strikeout potential. And you know, a week later, he's on the DL. And it's just this carousel just doesn't seem to stop this year.
Yeah. Bedrosian has been one of my guys too. I've been watching him for years since the inception of the podcast. Really, I've been talking about him 3 years ago. And it seemed like every time he got called up, I'd mention it on the show. And then he just, you know, wet the bed. He just sucked until this year. Finally, he was ready and he dominated. And I don't think I owned him anywhere. So I don't know how that works. Talk about
that's the worst. You got to stick with your guns, Nate. I've been the leader of the parade for Jake Lamb for the last 2 years. And it's been a lonely parade. It's been me and a tuba player. It's been bad up until this year. And finally, but you know, and I made sure every year I was like, I can't do it because the 1 year I don't, it's when it's going to happen. And sure enough, finally, he's come to fruition this year. But, you know, you got to stick to your guns. And when you're smart about this stuff and you do your homework, most of the time, I would say, you know, 90% of the time, those guys eventually come around.
Yeah, I was on his strikeout rate, and then there's a couple guys too that you know, since fallen off. Jairo Diaz for the Rockies. I think he had Tommy John surgery now, unfortunately. But speaking of the Rockies, what are the odds that I would bring them up? Carlos, don't call me Emilio Estevez, is out of the closer role out there, and he allowed 7 runs in his last 2 outings, recording only 1 out in each of them, so he's since been removed. And it appears as though Adam Ottavino is going to close in Colorado. So what's your level of interest in Adam Ottavino, Joe?
Actually, I had a fair amount of interest in him a while ago because I think that he really fit the role. He also has that makeup. He's 30, and you see a lot of guys who have the right makeup and have the right arsenal tend to really do well in that role because they don't fizzle as easily and they don't let a bad outing get to them as much because they've been around a little bit. And it was a shame that he had the Tommy John because he was poised to take that role and run with it. And look, I know it's Colorado, but it's one inning at a time, so let's not freak out about that. You know, guys like even Joe Nathan didn't come to that role till about, I want to say, 29, 30 years old. And he had a very illustrious career as a closer. Mm-hmm. I like Ottavino. I'm, again, desperate for saves. You go and you add him. You make that happen because it's everybody for themselves in the save category this year. And it's really, if you have any fab left and you can stand it, go out and spend it. Because if Ottavino saves a couple games in a row, he's going to be all right, you know?
Yep, and I honestly, I feel pretty confident in him hanging on to that gig for the rest of the year. He was elite, really, as a closer before he went down with Tommy John. Over 11 strikeouts per nine, under 2 walks per nine. I guess, granted, it was only 10 innings before he went down with Tommy John. But still, and he hasn't allowed a run yet in his 11 and two-thirds this year. So I have a lot of confidence in Ottavino. I think we had been recommending holding on to Ottavino and possibly McGee as well, since we didn't have a whole lot of confidence in Emilio Estevez there.
But, Emilio!
he was so good in the Breakfast Club.
So good.
And one guy that I think bears mentioning here real quickly before we take a break, Raisel Iglesias, he recorded a save for the Reds. I believe it was just last night. Obviously, Tony Cingrani, I don't think, is the long-term answer there. And what do you think about Raisel as a closer this year, and are they going to stretch him back out next year? What's your gut feeling on that?
You know, that's an interesting one, only because a guy like Iglesias, he has that El Duque-ish quality about him, you know, different arm angles and things like that. And yeah. I think that makes him really tough in that one inning thing. You remember when El Duque was pitching out of the bullpen later in his career? Yeah. How just impossible he was. I mean, it's one thing like when, you know, you get three or four looks at a guy like that. It's another thing where you get one shot at him.
Right.
I think he could be a sneaky good guy to add in that if that role should actually present itself. And God knows nobody wants to be the closer in Cincinnati this year. Nobody's taken that role and run with it.
Nope.
They've tried pretty much everyone. When Jumbo Diaz fails us, I don't know what left to say. But as far as I'm concerned, I think that's a guy that this time of year, you are trying to throw a bunch of stuff to a wall and see what sticks. And I think Iglesias is a guy that's had some nice moments in the past in the starting rotation. As far as next year, I don't know what they're going to do with him, but if he excels in that role in 6 weeks down the stretch, who's to say that they don't keep him in there? So I would certainly imagine it.
Yeah, and I see, you know, every chance that he would be a great closer. And like you said, with those arm angles, it might be tough to keep him as a starter. I think it would be a waste of a contract for them to not at least try him as a starter again next year. But as far as just this year is concerned, I think if you're in the chase for the almighty save, you got to pick up Raisel Iglesias. Cingrani, not a huge roadblock. So I'd be going out and adding him as well. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to hear from Harvey Dinkelman and come back with some football.
Hello folks, Harvey Nickelman here with your Killadilla Pickup of the Week. This week's hothead is Mike Zunino, catcher for the Seattle Mariners. Zunino was demoted to AAA last year after being quite terrible for most of the season, and has spent most of his time since sucking down Moscow mules at the local barrel house. He turned into a real beeswax, however, and has improved so much that he's now back up with the Major League squad and has claimed the role of starting backstop from Chris Iannetta. He's got massive raw power, and in only 61 plate appearances, he's hit 6 home runs and 3 doubles, featuring a whopping 41% hard contact rate. He's still whiffing on too many pitches, but catcher is uglier than a chucklehead this year, so Zunino should be a real difference maker in the power department for your fantasy squads down the stretch. As of this rating, he's owned in only 7% of Yahoo leagues, a number that needs to rise. Again, that's Mike Zunino, and I am Harvey Nickelman, reporting for the NastyCast, signing off.
All right. That is the end of the baseball talk for the day. So, public service announcement. We're done with that. We're switching sports. This ball looks a little different. It's oblong. Was it oblong spheroid? Is that what it's called?
Whatever you say, Nate Duncan.
I think that's what it is. Anyway, we're going to talk some
football. Did you just call me a name? I'm just not... Did you just call me an oblong spheroid? Is that what you just called me?
That's right. It's a compliment. Take it as a compliment,
Joe. Oh, okay. Never mind then.
That was a Counting Crows song. Didn't you ever?
My oblong spheroid is here, and I can't stop the rain.
It's so wet. So, as we previously mentioned, we've got this little black book thing to discuss, Joe.
Oh yeah.
Why don't you tell us, people? You know, we've picked up we had you on the show earlier this, you know, in the preseason, but it's been a while, and we've picked up a few new listeners since we moved to Blog Talk Radio. So, not everybody out there might be aware of what the black book is and what RPV is all about. So, if you could just sort of give that to our listeners in a nutshell, what are
Absolutely.
We talking about here?
Well, for those of you who don't know, or should I say, for those of you who do know, you can turn your dial down for a second because I'm sure you're sick of me already. But for those of you who don't, relative position value is or RPV is what I do in the Black Book. It is a comparison tool that allows you to really understand a player's true value measured against his peers. And this is completely adaptable to any format, to any sport, to any size league, to any style league. And that's what's great about it, because there's nothing else out there like that. That really, it's not about replacement value. We're talking about the fantasy league average. We're talking about understanding the difference of outfield one is a spot, because most teams are going to have an outfield one and most teams are going to have a number one starting pitcher. So you need to know, how much better is Kershaw than the rest of the starting pitchers? And you know, here's a scary thing. At one point, against the top 16 starting pitchers, Clayton Kershaw was actually a positive 35%, which is enormous when you consider the fact that you guys like Scherzer and Sale and all the talent that's in that first tier. He is 35% better than the middle tier.
That's insane. Yeah,
it's an insane thing. So basically, that's what it is. It boils down, guys, down to a percentage. It's not just projection based either, which I think gives you a false sense of security about, well, this guy could reach these numbers. It takes projections. It takes previous year stats. It takes 3-year averages for younger players. It takes minor league stats into account. And what it does is it creates a value for these guys compared to each other. So you understand not just my opinion of where the tiers are, but you can actually see where the tiers drop off and how significant, and then where it gets into the negative, and you understand where a guy is now actually hurting you, because fantasy is very simple. It's about me outscoring you as much as I can, and from as many spots in my lineup as I can, whether it be football or baseball or anything else. And if I can do that consistently, then I am going to win most of the time. And the readers have had great success with it. Lots of championships have been won. In fact, and then I have RPV per dollar, which is for the daily game and for auction players in those drafts, and understanding how to maximize not just the RPV, but also the RPV that you're paying for and the production you're paying for, which is a very fine line to walk. I had a guy, this is a true story. He actually tweeted me the other day and we started DMing, and he's a young kid. He made an investment, a couple $100s last year in daily fantasy football, and he turned into 14,000 last year following the principles. And he told me he used that money this year to go back to school. He didn't have to take out any loans, and he went back to school. He's studying media arts, and he's trying to do radio and sports, and he wants to do this. And I said, if that's not the best endorsement for this, I don't know what is. And it's true. And he said it's taking these principles and applying them, and it does work. And I know it does, because that's why it's number one for the 8th straight year in a row on Amazon.
Hell yeah, man. I bet I know what he said after he won that $14,000.
What did he say?
Yeah!
Yeah! I'm rich, biatch! That's what he really should say. But I mean, that's a great story. And you think that, you know, we do all this stuff, these shows, these books, these podcasts, and, you know, we think we're kind of just, you know, being idiots for the most part, or we're not making an impact.
That's all I do.
Hear a thing like, right, but you hear a story like that and you realize, hey, this actually is important to some people. And that's great stuff. And it's very hard to separate yourself, Nate. I mean, think about it. Yeah. Everybody's handed the same crap that you are. Everybody's got the same host sites with the same information, the same stats, the same breakdowns. It's spoon-fed to you. So it's almost like if you're bad at fantasy completely, then you're just lazy. At this point. So the question is, how do you separate yourself now that everybody is on a higher plane of competition? And RPV is that.
Absolutely, yeah. And it gets my full endorsement. Not only do you have just, you know, the RPV stuff in there, but you've got, you know, hot topic questions, you know, coming into the year, draft strategies, you know, dynasty leagues, just all kinds of stuff. You know, like you said, commissioner tips as well, like we talked about earlier. So where can the people find that? Amazon, right?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's $4.99. I mean, really, it's less than a cup of coffee at Starbucks. It's $4.99 on Amazon, yeah. And it's $4.99 as well on iTunes. So you can pick it up on either for your Apple device or for your Kindle or PC or whatever you like.
There you go. I mean, take your little Kindle with you on every trip to the John, and you'll get through the book by the time.
It's the best place to read my work.
It is.
That's what I always say.
You know what? Don't do it at work, though, because you're going to want to get through the book so fast. Your boss is going to be like, dude, why are you taking shits every 5 seconds?
What's going on in there? only up to wide receivers.
Let's go. We got Edith on the phone here. She's trying to buy a vacuum. Get back to your cubicle.
Tell that bitch to wait.
All right. So one thing that I was interested to get your opinion on is, when you're drafting, does the RPV directly tie into who you're targeting specifically, or do you sort of just roll it in with the flow of the draft?
Well, you always have to be flexible. I think, you know, you can.
Especially when you do new yoga.
Yes, especially then. You have to be flexible because every draft is going to be different. Every owners are going to be different. But it's really about understanding the value of players in the PPR versus the standard league versus the two quarterback league. There's too much of a generic wide brush that we paint these guys with. And it goes for every sport. You know, you see these tiers, these top 100, top 300. Who the F cares about? That is the most useless, time-consuming. Why anybody does that, and I say it all the time, it means nothing. It doesn't help anybody. And it's a complete waste of the time of the person putting it together and the person reading it, because it's not going to it doesn't matter. What matters is what's the best training you to make the best decisions while the draft is going on and while the board is changing. That's what matters. And understanding where the positive players are, where the mid-range are, and where the negative guys are. And for me, I think when the draft strategy, what you have to do is, you know, this year I know zero running back is a big deal, and I think you can make it work in the PPR. I think it's still hard to do in the standard league. I think it's something you have to really take into account in the standard leagues. And I think in the standard leagues, you have to be more willing to embrace quarterbacks because that production is so high that it might be something where you can make the case for those guys going earlier. In the PPR, it's different. I think you have to go wide receiver heavy early on. I think it matters. I also think that the injury quotient is much, much lower, and that's something you need to pay attention to. And as far as the way the landscape looks this year, there's a lot of talent at wide receiver, but it's really front-loaded. So once you get after the first – like if you get that fourth and fifth round there, all of a sudden that pool really starts to change in the fifth round, and it is not nearly as deep as you want it to be or you think it is, especially in the PPRs when the guys are flying off the board early. Whereas running back, I think there's a lot of guys you can speculate over, whether it be, you know, taking another chance on a Frank Gore or a Chris Ivory or some of these proven boring old guys who have been there and done that before. Yeah. You know, there's a lot more of those guys to be found later in the drafts than there are the wide receivers who can make an impact.
Yeah, I don't think from the mock drafts that I've been doing so far, I don't see any way outside of a PPR league, like you said, where I would go with the zero running back. I mean, I just would not feel comfortable enough with at least a solid RB1 from the first three rounds. I'm going to get a running back in there somewhere, and there are some values that I like now. You know, for the past 3 years, I feel like I've been ahead of the curve, not to pat myself on the back too hard, but I've sort of been doing the zero running back thing as far as I've just been taking wide receivers in the first and second rounds just because it seems like everybody is freaking getting hurt at the running back position, and that it just would drive me nuts. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to kind of try and play it a little more safe here, and it's worked out pretty well. But this year now, it seems like since wide receivers are going so early, you know, it almost feels like a zag is in order because you're getting some really good value on some running backs that are going to, you know, see full workloads. Like, you know, Eddie Lacy is a guy who he's down in drafts this year after
he left
a bitter taste in people's mouths last year. He burned me bad, but
I can't do it. I just can't. I can't do it. He wasn't that great when he was there 2 years ago either. He was okay. I mean, this whole thing of Eddie Lacy being this guy that all of a sudden is going to bounce. Look, and he might. That's fine. No, not on my team, though. I think you have to know that, too. The guys that you're willing to let succeed on somebody else's team.
Yeah. You're not into Shreddy Lacy?
No. Mark Ingram I'm into, who's in that same grouping.
Yeah.
I'd rather take my chances with Forte or Ingram or guys like that than Eddie Lacy. I think that's a much better way to spend your money, as it were, or to spend your draft picks.
Yeah, it depends on where he's going. If I can get Lacy in like the third round or something, I think I would be okay with that. Just because if you think about it, he's not going to get pushed by James Starks too much. I think that they're going to give Lacy another long look and have him in there. You know, at the goal line, he should be better than he was last year. That whole offense, I think, is going to take a step forward from what it was. It was just like a lost season for that offense last year. You know, hopefully that missing ingredient, Jordy Nelson, will be back this year, although I can't say that I particularly love his draft value at this point. But I was interested to get some of the guys that you're specifically targeting this year as opposed to, you know, maybe guys that are just falling for you. But who are you most interested in attaining this year in drafts?
Well, I think when you're looking at the board this year, I think it's pretty rote. Everybody's already talked about the Keenan Allens of the world and the potential there and the PPR with a guy like that. I think that the thing that you want to look towards is a little bit more of the guys who might be able to make an impact later on. Ferguson in Indianapolis, I think, is a guy that the writing's on the wall for Gore. They're already going to be scaling him back this year. That's a guy that you could see make some impact, whether it be in the passing game or actually getting some rushing touches as well. Devontae Booker is a guy late in drafts that I've gotten on every single team that I have because I don't buy C.J. Anderson. Sorry, I didn't buy him last year. In fact, you can go and buy last year's Black Book for $4.99 and see that I didn't have him in the first round. And I think I was the only publication that refused to put C.J. Anderson in the first round. And I took a lot of heat for that. And well, it turns out I was right about that.
Yep. I hate him with the passion of a thousand suns, by the way. So.
And as you should, because this was a guy that nobody knew anything about. It was a nice waiver. And I was a guy that picked him up off waivers and rode him to some big-time championships. So I loved owning him, but I wasn't investing in him as a first-round kind of talent. And Booker, to me, is a guy that, you know, while people are going to be wasting picks on Arian Foster, give me a guy like Booker who fits this offense to a T, had some really fantastic moments in college, and really his draft stock fell because of an injury. And you're looking at a guy who could take over that role. All they wanted last year in Denver was C.J. Anderson to be the guy. Yep. and to hand the ball off. And he couldn't get it done. Like, they could not make that situation work. Towards the end of the playoffs, it kind of started to roll, but the defense was playing out of their mind at that point. So they were just running off momentum. To me, I think that's a guy that I would target. And I think that you also see there's a bias against veterans. Guys like DeSean Jackson, who are lasting a very long time. When he was on the field last year, he was very productive. That's a guy playing for a contract. That's a guy where you can make a case, you know, outside of Reed, he is absolutely the second best option there in the passing game in Washington. There guys like Crabtree. I think the veteran guys tend to get knocked because everybody wants to be the guy in the room or the gal in the room who they go, oh, wow, you know who that is? Oh, awesome. You took a guy with great potential. Awesome. Good for you. You can take your potential and you can stick it. Yeah. I'm going to take a bunch of proven guys who have been there and done that and played in this league before. And I see guys like Shepard, you know, who are great talent but have never played a down in the NFL. You see some of these guys last year, like Melvin Gordon getting drafted real high, never played a down in the NFL. It's one thing to take these guys as bonuses. It's another thing to take them as anchors that you're going to need. And I think if you take too many of those guys too early, you're going to sink that ship.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I noticed that the fantasy community in general does, going back to C.J. Anderson, and this is true in baseball too, you know, you see a guy who sort of comes out of nowhere and really propels a lot of championship teams in the second half of a season. And then the next year, they're really, really overvalued. And, yeah. You know, you can't expect that same level of production just automatically, you know, across the whole season. You really there's so much recency bias that goes on, and football especially, you know, with a guy like C.J. Anderson. But one guy that I like this year, as I was just kind of, you know, looking up and down some rankings as far as guys that I might be interested in, John Brown piques my interest. I remember him getting screwed out of a lot of yards last year due to defensive pass interference calls. Like, instead of him catching the ball, he'd just get tripped up, you know, or whatnot. Yeah. So I think I'm interested to see what you think about him, because I see him really taking a step forward this year.
He's an explosive talent. Brown is an explosive talent, and you know Bruce Arians is going to want to matriculate the ball downfield, as they say. My only concern, and I actually so far, I don't own any shares of any of those guys. My concern is Carson Palmer. And if he should, I mean, he's up there in age, and he is not exactly the Iron Man when it comes to playing games. And that's a problem. And that's, for me, something that I'm not as interested to tie myself to that wagon. And it's not, and I love Bruce Arians and I love watching that team. I really root for them, but Brown is very exciting. If I can get him, I'm fine with taking him. But that's the only holdup I have about all three of those guys, Floyd, Fitzgerald, and him. Johnson is the only one that I feel okay about because he's quarterback proof. If quarterback goes down, Johnson's workload might even go up a tick. So I think that's the thing where you're never sure where that's gonna go.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, if Carson goes down, I think that whole team suffers. So let's see. Let's look into a recent draft that you've done, Joe. You were you were part of the SiriusXM Hosts League draft.
Indeed.
Recently. So let's see what you came up with here. You know what?
And I had the 12 spot, by the way. So okay. I was not 12, excuse me, 15, 16, however many teams are in this. It's 15 or 16 teams. I apologize.
Yeah.
I will tell you exactly how many teams. You talk, I'll look.
Okay. Well, I mean, I was going to say, you would be my favorite host, of course, if it weren't for Lisa Ann taking part in this as well.
That.
So yeah, you'll pardon me if I'd be more excited.
Well, she's a perfect example there of somebody I think who, you know, she knows what she's doing. I mean, Lisa is terrific, and I don't know if anybody works as hard as she does at this. But her draft is to me a lot of potential. You know, Eddie Lacy, that's a guy you say, okay, he could bounce back, or he could be a complete useless waste of space.
Yeah.
Tyler Lockett, terrific. Terrific talent. Will he go? I don't know if he's going to make it to that next. She's got guys like DeMarco Murray. I mean, there's just a lot of questions in there, and you know, taking a lot of rookies too, as far to back them up, instead of taking, you know, guys proven, you're getting a lot of Derrick Henry types on that kind of a roster, and I don't like the way that goes.
Yeah, the only rookie that I'm really seeing big things from this year is Zeke, my boy Zeke Elliott. I'm a Cowboys fan, so I was pretty stoked. What's that?
It's hard not to.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a perfect fit. So, assuming that he's healthy going into the season, I have no problem paying.
No, it's a 12 teamer. I was the wheel. Okay. I was the wheel in this one. So it's hard to keep up with all these, to be honest with you. But yes, I was the wheel in this draft, and I was 12, which is where you have to understand you're not going to get a superstar, and you have to be at peace with that.
Yeah. So, how'd you go on the wheel here?
Well, on the wheel, I took Keenan Allen and Brandon Marshall. I was hoping Robinson would last to me. He didn't. I had the opportunity to take Gronkowski. I passed with the knowledge being I wanted to get the two big wide receivers here. Wanted to get guys who were going to both have the potential to catch 100 balls between them. Both of them have a chance to catch, I would say, you know, 8 to 10 touchdowns. And I think I did that there. Robinson would have been my preference, but he didn't quite make it down to me. And I was hoping to get Reed on the wraparound when it came back to me, and I did. So that gamble paid off, because I think that I don't think there's going to be, if Reed stays healthy, and again, that's an if, but last year he was pretty solid, and I think maybe we can put those injury questions behind him finally. But he's not that far off from Gronkowski.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was just terrific when he was in last year. And I'm sort of on the fence as to what I think about Washington's offense this year, because I'm not really sold on Kirk Cousins just yet. DeSean Jackson, who you did draft in this league. Mm-hmm. I also hate him with the fire without the sun.
well, you're a Cowboys fan.
Well, not only like
you hate the Eagles, and you hate the you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of hatred going on between them and the Redskins and all those former Eagles, now Redskins. You know.
Yeah. Well, he's also like one of the biggest dumbasses in the league,
he's a complete jackass,
throwing away touchdowns and whatnot. But
jackass.
Yeah, when he's in there, you know, I think for me, perfect third wide receiver. You know, the boomer bust. Kind of guy. He can certainly win you weeks. So I also like Jonathan Stewart, that pick. See, on a pregame basis last year, he was terrific. Obviously, you're just kind of worried about injury there.
Well, you know, he's going to miss out on some touchdowns too because of Cam Newton. So, you know, that's going to happen also.
Yeah, that also seems to be, you know, deflating his draft stock a little bit.
It is, and rightfully so, and he's dealing with a foot issue there. But, I mean, Cameron R's pain really didn't separate himself at all last year when the opportunity was handed to him. And, again, where I got Stewart so late, I mean, I got him really late. So it's a no-brainer there for me, and I have him and Ingram together in the two running back spots with Booker, Chris Ivory, Trekandrick West hedging my bets there. So I've got a lot of depth at that position too.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed Blake Bortles is your quarterback. Are you concerned about a big drop off from what he put up last year?
Not at all. Okay. I'm a big Blake Bortles believer. I think this whole, like, it's impossible. Look, the rates that they are putting up last year, yes, they probably are not sustainable. But that doesn't mean they can't come within 85% of them or 90% of them. And that still puts them in a really good spot. And I also took Stafford, too, because that was a guy in the second half, once Jim Bob Cooter, which I get paid a dollar every time I say Jim Bob Cooter. Once he took over running that offense, they were terrific. I mean, Stafford's numbers went way up, and Stafford is a terrific, you know, aggressive passer. And I think that the whole Megatron being gone thing is also well overblown, too. You know, the collective wisdom last year the safe pick, you know, all that stuff, was Eddie Lacy at number one, because, yeah, you know, you don't know what you're going to get out of Peterson, and you don't know about this guy and Le'Veon Bell suspended and this and that. And look where the safe gets you. You know, you can't go everything by rote or by the general consensus. That's going to screw you in the NFL. You have to think for yourself a little bit.
Absolutely. Let's see. One last guy.
And Travis Benjamin is my boyfriend. Can I just say that?
Hey, okay.
I take Travis Benjamin in every draft because, yep, that guy put up 900 yards in the worst possible scenario in Cleveland last year.
Yeah.
and this kid can fly. And you're telling me that you're going to put him on the other end with, you know, Keenan Allen there in the slot, or you know, I think they just signed James Jones to replace Stevie Johnson. I don't know where Allen's going to line up necessarily, but you're telling me that you're going to have a guy with a real arm and a real quarterback like Phillip Rivers throwing him the ball?
Absolutely.
Sign me up, man.
Absolutely, yeah. He showed that he could fly last year. And on that note, actually, that is the guy who I was going to bring up. And also, I think it bears mentioning what Tyrell Williams is doing in camp with the Chargers as well. Not that I think that he could necessarily push Benjamin for that wide receiver two job by any means, but he's a guy who's sort of a freak athlete, 6'4", 204 pounds with, you know, 4.4 speed. He's been impressing in camp, so I think that as a third wide receiver in that offense, I mean, you could be looking at a really good offense in San Diego, and I think Williams at this point could be, you know, like sort of a last round flyer.
And they're going to need it because they can't run the ball, and they have no defense, so that's going to really make a big difference there.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of yards out of Phillip Rivers this year.
Oh yeah,
fireworks. All right, man. It's been fun. I could talk to you all night, but we do have other things to do. I have to sleep a lot and hopefully get rid of this eternal head cold.
Yes. So, let's hope that you're feeling better next time we chat.
Oh, Lord, I hope so. But before we take off, man, let everybody know where they can follow your work.
Oh, well, sure. I'm the fantasy sports fungus. You can find me pretty much anywhere.
I'm going to call you that for now. You're no longer the oblong spheroid. You're the fungus.
There you go. I'm the fantasy sports fungus. You can follow me on Twitter at JoePizzaPia17. You can see me sometimes on the Fantasy Sports Network from time to time. I make a lot of appearances on there. I host Fantasy Sports Tonight on Sirius XM Radio every Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. And that is a fun and exciting program. Two unbridled hours of me. And then you can get the new Fantasy Football Black Book 2016. Number one in fantasy sports for the eighth straight time between baseball and football over the last 5 years. Eight books, 5 years, pretty good. And then also number one in football books. Did you know that? That's me and then The Blind Side and then some Friday Night Lights thing. I've never heard of that, but I don't know. So, yeah, it doesn't hold it very long, but it actually hit number one on Amazon in football books the other day. So that's a pretty cool thing.
Shazam. Yeah. And it's
bang.
It's well earned, my friend. I mean,
thanks, man. I appreciate
it. So, yeah, I read them and they're worth reading, worth investing in for sure. So thanks for joining us again, Joe. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And the regular folks should be back next week for all you Bucketeers out there who for some reason would miss the nasally noises from normal Joe. Hopefully he'll be fully clothed, well-stretched, and very bendy. So until next week, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.